So Rabotai, we have a problem here. And to appreciate this problem, you have to open up the Gemara to Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. And the Gemara records a machlokas tanoim regarding the minimum shear of an esrog. This is called esrog katan, a small esrog. So if you want to see it inside, it's only two lines. It's on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. You can count up approximately 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. And you're on 31B, and you're counting up about 10 lines from the bottom. You'll see a line that starts with the word Shema. Okay, which means you should listen. So I'm asking you to listen. Toshma, come and listen. So it says, Shir Esrog Katan, Rabbi Meir Omer, according to Rabbi Meir, the minimum size of an Esrog is an Egos. Okay, it's the size of a walnut. Not very large. Rabbi Yehuda says, Kibetza, it's got to be much larger. It's got to be the size of an egg. The Gemara thinks initially that the reason for Rabbi Yehuda is based on the halach of Hadar, and the Torah says creates Hadar with regard to an Esrog, and maybe Rabbi Yehuda's on board that the word Hadar means it's got to be a beautiful Esrog, and it's not so beautiful if it's if it's a tiny Esrog, an egos, you could close your head and if you have an Esrog from years ago, it'll probably be the size of an egos, very dangerous. If you pelt someone with last year's Esrog and you hit him past in the temple, you could probably kill him. But the Gemara concludes, no. Rabbi Yehuda never accepted the requirement of Hadar, the way we understand it, as a precondition for an Esrog. He used the word Hadar for something else. But rather, it's Mishum Delo Gamar Peira. Those are the four key words in the Gemara. And we'll have, in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll have something to say about that as we go along. But what we want to know at this point, this is the question that we raise, is how do we paskin? Do we paskin like Rabbi Meir, or do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? Now keep in mind that the Gemara in Erevin has a principle called Machlokes Rabbi Meir for Rabbi Yehuda, Halachik Rabbi Yehuda. The Rush, right here at Siman Chav Dalet, Afinart, as we say, on the spot, without quoting the Gemara in Erevin, says Halachik Rabbi Yehuda, which means that an Esrog has to have the minimum shear of Kibetz. Then we open up a sugya in Masechta Bava Kamma. That's on Daf Tes Amud Beis. A sugya called Rabbi Zera. That's the name of the sugya. And the subject of the sugya is Hidur Mitzvah. And then Rabbi Zera establishes that it says Zekei L'Yanvehu. To what extent do you have a financial obligation to embellish your mitzvah? Meaning you have a choice of two mitzvahs, but one is going to cost you more because it's a more beautiful. And the seller is going to demand the price for that. Again, the first one is free.
The first one is more.
No, it's just a joke. The first one is free, yeah. He wants to know where to get the first one for free, right?
Yes, the first one. I thought you said that.
It's free, except you're going to have to beat up all the other guys online. You know, saying, but so the principle of Reb Zera is you have to add up to a shlish, up to one third of the value. In other words, you compare the two objects and their values. The basic one is 10, and you have to be willing to jack it up if he offers you another possibility of more beautiful Chefetz Shel Mitzvah by a third of the price. That's it. That's the ceiling. You don't have to go beyond that. The Rush, there in Masechta Bava Kamma, when he codifies the halacha of Rabbi Zera, he gives the example of an Esrog. And he gives the following example. He says that you bought an Esrog which is the size of an Egos. They're offering you a second Esrog which is a bit larger or more beautiful for an extra shlish. Buy the one that's larger and pay the shlish. Rebbeinu Shlomo, the Beis Yosef asks, how could this be? The Rush himself in Masechta Sukkah is committed to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And here, in Masechta Bava Kamma, when he wants to give us an example of Mosifin El Shlish, he gives the example of an Egos. That it's really a basic Esrog that's kosher in and of itself, but you have to add an extra Shlish in order to make it more beautiful. What's this basic Esrog? It's Ke'egos. It means that he's accepting the Shita of Rabbi Meir. How could the same Rush in Hilchus Sukkah, Paskin, that you need, like Rabbi Yehuda Kibetza, and the same Rush in Hilchus Heder Mitzvah, saying that the basic Esrog, like Rabbi Meir, I meant to say Rabbi Yehuda, did I say Rabbi Yehuda? And that the basic Esrog is like Rabbi Meir, it's an Egos. Comes along Beis Yosef, and he says that the Rush in Hilchus Heder Mitzvah there at Masechet Bava Kamma is Ledugma B'Almanach. He's just giving you an example. Meaning that the Rosh was not interested at that point, it wasn't on his radar screen to enter into the question whether we pass like Rav Meir ke'egos or we pass like Rav Yehuda ke'beitza. So he mentioned the egos, but that doesn't mean la'aloch he passes like the egos. You want to know how he passes about the minimal size of an esrog cut, and you have to klachlecha to the Rosh afenart, meaning in the spot where he's addressing the issue of an esrog, and that's in Hilchus Sukkah. The problem is that the Smag, when he quotes in Bava Kamma the halacha of adding a shlish, he mentions O egos, O kibetza, which means, as we call it in the Gemara's language, markedly and markedly. He means to say the following: you want to know what the basic esrog is? It's either keegos or kibetza. If you're Rabbi Meir, then it's keegos. If you are Rabbi Yehuda, then it's Kibetza. In other words, the Smag feels no compulsion here to take a stand on an issue, which is an issue in Hilchus Sukkah. He's just using the Esrog as an example. He could have given 1,000 different examples of the mechanism and the rule of Rabbi Zera. So he gives the case of an Esrog. So he mentions, without going into detail, it could be an Esrog of an Egos, it could be an Esrog of Rabbi of a Kibetza. Adarabba, from this smag, I derive the conclusion, again, that Beis Yosef, if he was here, he would hit me over the head, but I derive the conclusion that the Rosh is telling you that the minimum shear of an esrog is an egos. Otherwise, why didn't the Rosh quote both opportunities, both possibilities? Why does he quote only egos? The smag is going to shed a light on the Rosh. Because the very fact that the Smag felt compelled to offer me two opportunities, meaning that now is not the time, this is not the context in which I'm going to paskin on the Machlok stream Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, because I'm only giving you this as an example through the back door of what it means to be Mosef Ad Shlish. That means that if the Rosh only chose one of two options, he didn't bother to add the extra ink and write O Kibetza, he's paskining like Rabbi Meir. No, if that be the case, then the Beis Yosef is unacceptable. Kedugma bi'alma. It's only an example. But, let's face the music. The Rosh is now contradicting himself. So this is where we left it yesterday. For those who weren't here, you got pretty much the chazara, the review of yesterday. For those who were here yesterday, I hope you'll be moichel me, but for myself, I need to review it. And now we get to a brilliant, brilliant chiddush of the Ma'arik. The Ma'arik is going to break new ground here, both in terms of understanding how Heder Mitzvah operates, and in terms of reconciling the so-called contradiction between the two statements of the Rosh.
You have the copies of the Ma'arik
of the Rosh? I have the one copy from yesterday. Are there more copies?
I gave you 5 more. Be
the So then they should be on my shtender outside. No, that's for my Chumash class. So I don't have the...
I can print more, but I'm saying...
No. It's on my shtender. I didn't take it home, so...
There it is. Did they learn out Heder Mitzvah from any other place except Zekeh and Yadvei?
Not that I know of. Again, you know, you may know sugyas and shas that I'm not familiar with. You know, I'm struggling enough with what I have. You know, as I always tell you, you know, that I got to stick to what I have. Okay.
There's a pashtus of saying Zekeh and Yadvei.
Only 4. Okay.
So that's we want to honor the Mitzvah, so to speak, by going beyond what you can squeak by with.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's what we said is the insight of the Smag, that the Smag is telling us, don't think that any time they offer you two mitzvahs, that by definition you have to spend more money on the more expensive one, because ain't l'dover sof. you know, you can always get a mitzvah that's more beautiful the next month. So at what point are you going to finally say Ad Kan? And therefore the Sman takes it the opposite direction. She's saying all you need to do is get the basic mitzvah. And on top of that, to be Mekayim Zekei Ve'aveihu, go a little bit beyond the basic mitzvah. So it's fascinating because according to the Smag, every time I fulfill the mitzvah of Zekei Ve'aveihu, I have to ask myself a very lumpish question in any particular mitzvah. And that is, what's the basic mitzvah? What's the bare bones, lowest bottom line of the mitzvah? Once you determine what the bottom line is, then whether you have that in front of you available or you don't, that's irrelevant. That's just theoretical. But imagine that you had it in front of you. And now, add another shlish. But that doesn't mean that I have to go endlessly and ask myself, well, what's more beautiful than this and more beautiful than that? It's always the basic mitzvah. Yeah.
So when you go looking for an etrog,
right. So
you start off by finding the very cheapest one that is kosher, right. And then just add a third.
Correct. And that's a fascinating insight into Zekei Ve'aveihu.
So nobody would sell, nobody would be able to sell the most expensive etrog.
That's right. Yesterday, Rabbi Sachtowitz mentioned Rabbi Hyman from Baltimore. You know, the people who want, you know, the sky's the limit, they'll pay anything. I know someone from a movie called Ushpizin, and he spent 1,000 shekel on an estric. It ended up as a lemon cut up into his salad, if you saw the movie. That's a great movie, by the way. I showed that movie to my class in MMY. I don't know if Zahava was there. She might have been there. It's a long time ago, Ushpizin. Anyway.
She's 32, so that's a little...
Yeah, it might be. I don't remember exactly. Shuly Rand. You remember Shuly Rand? He's great, Shuly Rand. I haven't followed his career, but, you know, he won me over. And my wife and I once went to see him live. He's great. So let's appreciate the Ma'arik. This Chiddush of the Ma'arik, I get very emotional about, because... to me, it's like Mamish Birchas Amen on this Ma'arik. And it opens up new vistas. And the most exciting thing, the benefit here, is the dividends, I would call it, is that we can see that there's no contradiction here between the Rosh in Masechta Sukkah and the Rosh in Masechta Bava Kamma. So the Ma'arik says the following. I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, but he says the following. He says that if you have an esrog that grows to the size of a kibetza, then everybody agrees, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, sheyesh bo ktsas hidur. This is the breakthrough of the Ma'arik. In other words, there's some element of beauty in an esrog that has the size of a kibetza. Again, it's a minimum element of Hidur, but nevertheless, it's an element of Hidur despite it all. And on that, there's no machlokas. He says the following. In the case of an esrog that is gadol kibetza, then yesh bo ktsas noi. That's the word he used. It has a minimum element of noi in the size of the esrog itself. And then he says the following, that the din of hidur mitzvah shlish requires me to get a little bit of hidur, a minimum hidur, and that's it. How do I gauge a minimum of hidur? That's what Rabbi Zeri is telling me. My minimum of hidur is to go beyond the bare bones by one shlish, by a third of its value. Wait, just give me 1 minute, because otherwise I'm going to mess up here. It's very profound. So the mathematics here is very sensitive. Says the Ma'arik, the whole discussion about Rabbi Zeira and Zekei Ve'aveihu in the case of an esrog is only relevant according to Rabbi Meir. Why? Because if the whole purpose of Rabbi Zeira's kiyum of Zekei Ve'aveihu is to get at least the barest minimum of hidur, then it cannot be relevant in the case of a beitza, of an esrog that's as large as a beitza, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the basic element of an esrog, the bare minimum, is kibetza, because it is called hidur, meaning it's already a pre-eitz hadar. If it's a pre-eitz hadar because it has miktas noi, says the Ma'arik, then Rabbi Zaira's principle could not apply. Because Rabbi Zaira wants to get what? What's his purpose? To get Miksas Noi. You already have Miksas Noi. Is Memela, if you have an Esrog which is Kibetza, then no one, not Rabbi Meir nor Rabbi Yehuda, would require the mitzvah of Zekein V'Aveihu. Because Rabbi Zeira's point was that Zekein V'Aveihu means supply it with the barest minimum of Hidur. This Esrog, which is Kibetza, already has built in a Kiyum of Hidur. Albeit a Mitzvah's Kiyum, it's only a partial Noi, but it's enough of a Noi that I no longer have a Chiyuv Noi. Because the whole Chiyuv of Noi, of Zekein V'Aveihu, Aveihu is Milosh and Noi, is to establish some sort of mixas noi in the theory of relativity relative to the bare basics. But if the bare basics, by its very definition, that's how the Torah describes the mitzvah according to Rabbi, requires noi, so then I already have noi. And therefore there's no additional mitzvah of noi on top of a mitzvah which has noi in it. Is memela what the Rush was asking himself is, I'm trying to formulate the right words. In what scenario, in what situation, could I possibly come up with an example of Zekein V'Aveihu, meaning adding a Shlishi coin to Rav Zeira, in order to achieve Noi, in the case of an Esrog? Again, in other mitzvahs, you wouldn't have this problem. But in Esrog, the Rush had a particular problem. That's what the Marik is offering. Because if you're going to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, namely that the minimum shear of an Esrog is Kibetza, then by definition, Rabbi Zeira's principle would not apply. It's a null set. Because if Rabbi Zeira is trying to achieve what? The minimum net level of Noi, I already have Noi. Noi is built into the Esrog because the Esrog has to be no smaller than a Kibetza according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda now becomes totally irrelevant to the Sugi Rabbi Zeira. So when the Rush quotes the Ke'egos, it's not because he's paskining like Rabbi Meir. He's asking a theoretical question. Namely, could I come up possibly with a case of Zekein V'Aveihu in Esrog? And the answer is, it's only possible according to Rabbi Meir. So wait a minute. Here's the punchline of the Marik. The Marik is saying that there are two sugyas and Tzvei Dinim, two different Dinim. Don't ask a question, a stira, from one Rush to the other Rush, because in each case the Rush is addressing a different question. In the Sugyan Sukkah, the Rush is asking the question, what is the barest minimum Esrog that I can buy, that I can use for the mitzvot of Ulkachtem Lochem? And the answer is, we're going to pass them like whom? Like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore the barest minimum is what? Is Kibetza. In Masechta of Bava Kama, in the Sugya of Noi Mitzvah, Zekein V'Aveihu, the Rush is addressing a different question. And he's asking in the Welt, meaning out there in the conceptual world, is there a case where Rav Zeira would require me, by virtue of Zekein V'Aveihu, to spend an extra third on the Mitzvah? And here, the Rush is giving you an example, which is not halacha l'maisa, because he just wants to know, within the context of Esrog, is there a situation in which I'd be chayev to, I would apply the chiyuv of whom? Of Rabbi Zeira, of adding a shlish? He says only in egos. Why? Because since, in the case of Kibetz, I already have what? Mitzvah's Noi, then Rabbi Zeira doesn't apply. Because the whole goal of Rabbi Zeira is to get to achieve Mitzvah's Noi. I already have Mitzvah's Noi. So the only theoretical possibility in Hilchas Esrog, where you can find a case of Rabbi Zeira and apply his principle of getting Mitzvah's Noi, is only according to Rabbi Meir in the case of an egos. Is Mamela Rabosai, if we take the Marik and we go back to the Beis Yosef, we can add a whole new light in the Beis Yosef. What does the Beis Yosef mean that the Rush meant kidugma bi'alma? What do you mean kidugma bi'alma? Who are you fooling over here?
You can't do it. It's just
correct.
Theoretical.
And do you see, Michael, the beauty now of the Marik? Again, the Marik doesn't quote the Beis Yosef because he was before the Beis Yosef historically. But he sheds a beautiful light on the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef was not just trying to pull a fast one on us. Kidugma bi'alma. You know, come on, like, who are you fooling here with Dugma Bialma? We saw in the Smag that the Smag went through the whole spiel. You know, he went through egos, he went through Kibetza. No! There's no Kibetza here. The Rush deliberately omitted kibetza. Because his purpose was not to give you a halach lemais of the Rosh. The Rosh was only dealing with the sugya of Reb Zeira, and he wanted to tell you that in the context of Hilchas Esro, the only echetimtza, the only possibility or feasibility of a scenario in which Rebbe Zeira's principle would apply is only according to Rebbe Meir. That's called the Dugma B'Alma. The Dugma B'Alma means it's purely theoretical, but the Beis Yosef is trying to tell us that the Rosh is conveying to us a very, very important message. That the whole sugya of Reb Zeira and Hilchas Esrog is only Kedugma B'Alma. It's only a theoretical possibility. And that is because once I have a kibetza, I've already achieved Zekei L'Yaveu. I don't have an extra chiyu of Zekei L'Yaveu, because Zekei L'Yaveu means to add noi to something that's basic. Alan, you're on board. The trouble with you guys is you don't get excited about a beautiful shtickle Torah. If I was your mashgiach in yeshiva, Alan, I would give you an hour's musa shmuz about kaltul litvax. I don't understand. How can you not get excited about this
marik?
What?
I'm about to get excited about a beautiful shtickle Torah, but it doesn't. It's not like the marik.
No.
No, okay. But I mean, maybe
you're smarter than the Marik. I shouldn't take it away from you. The Marik is not Kermine, you know what I'm saying?
Seriously, the thing is, it's counterintuitive to say that something that is a minimum shear also fulfills Zek Eliyahu. Zek Eliyahu seems to impart the message that it's beyond the bare minimum.
Here's what the Marik is going to answer you, Alan. He's going to say the following. That in every mitzvah, with the exception of Esrog, and that's going to be based on a pasuk, but in every mitzvah, with the exception of Esrog, when you ask yourself what is the bare minimum, then by definition you're asking for the absence of noi. That's what bare minimum means. Meaning, whenever the Torah gives you a minimum shear, a minimum requirement, and the conditions are so basic, what the Torah is telling you is that there ain't no noi. Comes on Reb Zeira and he says, spend an extra shlish. Upgrade it to a noi.
Okay.
There's only one exception, and that's the Esrog.
Why?
According to Reb Yehuda.
No, it says pre-Esrog.
Exactly.
But
came along Reb Yehuda, and this is where Reb Meir couldn't tolerate it. And Reb Yehuda said, this is a different kind of mitzvah. The Hadar element is built into the mitzvah. It's built into the definition. Don't add another Hadar on top of a Hadar, because Reb Zeira says you have to add a Hadar onto a basic mitzvah. And a basic mitzvah means that it's mufka, it's excluded, it doesn't have Hadar. So you want to add Hadar on something that's already Mahudar? You can't do that. That's not Reb Zeira. However, you know who's going to save the day? That's what the Rosh wanted to point out. There is a possibility of an Esrog that's mufka from Hadar, and that's the bare basic Esrog. And here, Reb Zeira's principle can apply. That's the egos of Rebbe Meir.
So, Nachman Amar said, actually, we don't have to add a third of any Esrog.
There's no such thing as Ezekiel. I'm not posketing. I don't want you, Michael, to walk out of here and think for one split second that this is halach l'maisa. That's not my purpose. Again, if Mitzvah Hashem, we have time, we could go through the sugya of Hidur Mitzvah. Maybe when Chaim comes next Tuesday, we'll be able to hit him with this question and he'll give us guidelines. I myself was witness, because we used to go, and I'm dating myself here, there was a great posek on the Beis Din, what called the Badatz in Meir Shearim, and we used to go to see Rav Sholem Eisen, and he was the final word at that time on Esrog. And very often, we would wait online until you got up to the head of the line. It was a big tircha, but he was very popular, especially that time of the year. And very often, he would convince a guy that this is either not the Esrog you want to buy, or this is the Esrog you do want to buy. There's a limit. Again, he didn't go as far as Rav Chaim in those days, you could spend $1,000 on an Esrog and show it off. But Rabosai, the Marik, at this point, offers a second interpretation. And he's going to change the whole picture min ha-kotz el ha-kotz. Let's take a look at his second explanation.
Well,
And he says the following. You'll see it in V'Oge Shlomo. I think it's the second. Again, I'm not going to read it line by line. I'm just going to give you the summary of it because I have a lot to share with you today. And we started a bit late. What time is it? I just wanted to...
12:25.
Yeah, I'm never good at timing myself. Forget it.
50 minutes.
Okay. In the second answer, he says the following. That we have to turn to the sugya on Daf Lamed Vav. What's that sugya called?
Bosa.
The Rush holds in the sugya of Bosa that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda accept the Shita of the Chachamim against Rabbi Akiva, and Bosar is kosher. So when Esra got Bosar is kosher.
What does Bosar mean?
Sorry? Okay, so that was yesterday's Shia. So let me just give you, again, we're going to have a lot to say about this statement in about 5 minutes,
okay.
Because...
I'll wait.
No. You shouldn't wait. I'm not telling you to wait. But I'm just telling you, don't feel that if you don't understand what I'm saying now, that you're a loser, because we're going to say a lot about this. Okay. This, but I'm just going to give you kind of like to scratch the surface. Bosar means an esrog that was plucked prematurely. Had it been left, it would have grown to a greater size. And Rabbi Akiva doesn't like it, and we're going to discuss at great length again why Rabbi Akiva apostles an esrog got bosar on Daf Lamed Vav. But the Rabbanim say that an esrog got bosar is kosher. So Rashi tells us on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Beis that the shear of an esrog habosar is kipul halavam. It's the size of a bean. Now wait a second. Tosfos can't tolerate this, but let's understand Rashi. We have a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about the minimum size of an esrog. The smallest of the two is keegos. Kipul halavam is less than keegos. Says the Ma'arik, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would say that the minimum size of an esrog is kipul halavam. But what's going on here? Is he pulling the wool over my eyes? I looked in the Gemara and I saw machlokas whether it's keegos or kebet. But Rashi tells us that the size of the esrog is kipul halavam. So I'm in a bind. Says the Ma'arik, that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree, Nimtza the Svir Leil Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the Shir Hechshar Esrog who could pull all of them. So what are they arguing about, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? He says the following: Hard the plegi b'Shir Esrog who could bait so keegos, ain't only inyan Shir Ha Esrog. Shir Esrog is what Rashi is committed to this position. Is could pull all of them. It's like a bean. So what are they arguing about? Ella Plutasa, what are they arguing about? Is Le'inyan Shir Hiduro. They're arguing about the mitzvah of Zekeli Ve'anveyu. The Rabbi Meir, Bishir Egos, Ika Kitsas Hidur. In other words, all you need is Kipul Alavad, a minuscule Esrog, and you Yotze. But there's a Chiyuv of Hidur mitzvah. And now they offer you an esrog which is gigantic. I'm just being facetious, and it's the size of an egos. And Rabbi Meir says, you're chayev to buy again if it's within the boundaries of a shlish. You're chayev to buy the shear of an egos. Why? Because once you get to the key egos, you've already accomplished what? Mixasidu. Okay, don't leave out the word mixasidu because that's critical. Remember that the Ma'arik is committed to his understanding of Reb Zera, that Reb Zera wants you to spend an extra shlish in order to achieve what? Mixasidu. Again, we're not going to go the sky's the limit. You need mixasidu. Comes along. Wait, give me just a minute. Otherwise, I'm going to lose it. So, according to Rabbi Meir, once I hit the egos, that's already can mixasidu. Just 1 second. And therefore, I don't have to spend not a single penny beyond an ego. So whatever the egos is, if it's within the shlish, that's fine according to Rabbi Meir. Upligi Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda argues. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that, you know what? Adding it and increasing it up to the size of an egos is worthless. What do I mean by worthless? It doesn't even achieve mixas hidu, meaning the discrepancy between kapul halavan And ke'ego, says Rabbi Yehuda, is not enough to achieve our goal of mitzas hid. And therefore, comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and he says in order to fulfill the mitzvah of zekeinu avehu, he's chayav to buy an esrog the size of what? Kibetza. Why? Because if he doesn't get to that minimum element of kibetza, he hasn't achieved his goal of mitzas hid. So to go from kipul alavan to mitzas hidur and fulfill the requirement of zekeinu avehu, Rabbi Yehuda requires up to kibetza. Again, all within the context of a shlish. Is Menela, watch this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a mitzvah of kibetza. Why? Because of a shlish, correct? Rabbi Yehuda, chayav lahadir ad kibetza. Is Menela, osi shapi divrei arosh, aliba de hilchus, amayri dafka, min akotze lakotze, aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. The dafka de Rabbi Yehuda, kshemotze esro ke egos. Just one second. I lost it for a second. Let me just, again, there's a little mathematics here. You know, I'm very slow in mathematics. So I'm very, he says, Dafka Rabbi Yehuda, if he finds an esro, just a second, may have a sheer ego. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's kind to Mahadir Kibetzo. Is therefore the rush says that what? That according to Rabbi Yehuda, if he finds... Oh, I got it. Okay, sorry, I missed the mail. Here's the punchline, according to the Marik's second interpretation. If we pass in like Rabbi Yehuda, that means, in order to achieve Hidur, what do you need? You need Akibetza, correct? Now they're offering you an Esrog, which is the size of an egos. Do I have to spend another third in order to find buy an esrog that's kibetza? And what's the answer? Yes. But if I hold like Rabbi Meir holds in the discrepancy between what? Between kipul alavan and ke'egos. I already achieved mitzas hidur. So therefore, if you're offering me an esrog that's an egos size, then there is no mitzvah of Zekeinu Yavdehu. I would not apply the principle of Rabbi Zeira because I already have what? Mitzas Hidur. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, holds that there's no mitzas Hidur in what? In an egos. If they're offering me an egos, then I'm chayav in the mitzvah of Zekeinu Yavdehu. Why? Because since I don't have kibetza, I still haven't achieved my goal of what? Of mitzas Hidur. Now I have to spend an extra shlish to reach a kibetza. So it comes out that when the Rush quotes the case of ke'egos, he's standing on whose shoulders, Rabbi Osai? On Rabbi Yehuda's shoulders. Because if it would have been Rabbi Meir would say, you don't have to spend a penny more than you've spent for an egos, because once you got the ke'egos, in the discrepancy between kipul alavan and ke'egos, you've already achieved the mitzvah of zekeinu yavehu. So in the case of an egos, and the Rush is telling you have to add another shlish, he can only be making sense according to whom? Mm-hmm. According to Yehuda. Do you see where the Marik in his first round and second round went in a kotza la kotza? In other words, this is not the Beis Yosef, because again, the Beis Yosef would only make sense according to the Marik's first pshat, kidugma bi'alma, meaning that the Rush was only asking in Baba Kama a theoretical question, which would not be relevant to halacha. As Michael said before, I would never ever have to add a shlish because the minimum shear of an esrog is kibetza, and kibetza already has already achieved built into it the mitzas noy because it has hidur to it. And therefore, the Rush says, in a theoretical sense, if you want a paradigm, if you want a scenario of a dugma, if you write a dugma in Hebrew, or maybe an example or a scenario in English of zekeinu yaveh v'chiv te'er shlish, it can only be according to Rabbi Meir, where there's an egos that doesn't have any hider at all, and then you'd have to add a shlish. So that was the dugma yama. In the second explanation of the Marik, the Rush is talking halacha l'maisa, but paradoxically he's talking halacha l'maisa only according to whom? Mm-hmm. Only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because they're offering you an esrog which is ke'egos, And according to Rabbi Meir, once it's kegels, you've already achieved the mitzvah snoy, because you could have started with kapula lovon, and in that discrepancy you achieved mitzvah snoy. It comes along, Rabbi Yudin says, no, you have to buy an esrog. That's kibbutz. Not because of the minimum shear. Rashi says the minimum shear of an esrog is kapula lovon, but because Rabbi Yudin doesn't recognize that discrepancy between kapula lovon and egos as hidur, in order to add the element, the variable of hidur into the equation, you need kibbeitza. So the Rosh says, halach l'maisa, if they're offering you an esrog, which is ke-egos, kalvachomer if it's kepul alavan, but the Rosh wants to add another chiddush. The Rosh wants to say, you might think that the halach is like Rabbi Meir, and if the halach is like Rabbi Meir, and they're offering me kepul alavan, then I'm going to buy an esrog that's ke-egos, says the Rosh, no. We don't pass them like Rabbi Meir. And in such a case, there would be no requirement, it would be meaningless to buy egos, because you haven't achieved your goal. When does your goal become achievable? If you would buy what? A kibbutz.
But wouldn't we
it's
have,
only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now it's halacha l'maaseh.
According to the Ma'arik, would we not have, would the Rosh not, if this is really what the Rosh meant, he would have taught us much more if his example would be kagon, pull a lovan, and
so Yechiel is saying that he's skeptical as to whether or not we can take this Ma'arik and really push it into the Rosh. I mean, the Rosh didn't whisper a word about all this. It's what you call Iker Chas Min HaSefer. But again, you know, my take on Torah learning is I'm not so interested in that. Again, it's an important point, Chas Shalom. I don't mean to denigrate it, but to me,
it
opens up the whole sugya. So if you don't want to call it the Rosh, call it the Ma'arik. I mean, he's no slouch either, the Ma'arik. You know, how long after the Rosh did he live? Probably about 200 years?
I can't find it.
Oh, it's not on your thing. So you'll Google it. You know, but the Ma'arik is also a Rishon, although he's a late Rishon. You know, he's on the borderline between the Rishonim and the Acharonim.
Did the Rosh not give us an insight into whether he agrees with Rashi or Tosis and what the definition of Rabbanim is, whether it's Pul Lavan or a different size? Now, Rashi made up Pul Lavan.
Right.
It could have been a different size altogether.
Right.
Did the Rosh give us an insight?
So maybe it's my fault. You know, I was taking the Ma'arik and trying to push it into the Rosh. I don't know. Maybe you're right. You know, I have to do more research on your point, and maybe the Ma'arik should be taken as a separate category. But I'm just saying, if for one moment you could work out the technicalities, and again, you'd have to go through the Rosh and Simon Chav Dalet with a fine-tooth comb, but if you can fit this into the Rosh, it's absolutely stunning, because then it comes out that the Rosh is talking, Dafka, leave it to Rabbi Yehuda. So the whole premise of our discussion now, which we began yesterday and finished today, is Ribbono Shel Olam, the Rosh is contradicting himself. The Rosh in Bava Kamma is invoking the sheep of Rabbi Meir. And the answer is no. I'm going to pull the wool off your eyes. I'm going to tell you he's invoking the sheep of Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Meir, if you already have an esrog of an egos, then there's no reason to spend any more money, because the egos already has achieved your goal of mitzvah hidur. And Rabbi Zeira's principle of a shlish doesn't apply. But if they're offering you an egos, you know what I mean by an egos, I don't mean literally an egos, and they're offering you another esrog, which is kibbutz, that's where Rabbi Yehuda applies his principle of achieve mitzas hidur. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda holds that an egos is garnish merit. An egos is just as good as kapul alavan. It's so freaking small that you call it a pul alavan. You want to use it, and the yotz of the mitzvah, vakasha. But you still haven't fulfilled your obligation vis-a-vis another mitzvah. What's that? Zekeli aveil. In order to achieve that, you have to add a shlish and buy yourself an esra which has mitzas hidur, which is what? Which is
kibbutz. I agree, it's a beautiful shot. I just think that Rush was possibly telling us how he holds in Machlokas Rashi Tosus in what the Rabbani is saying. He's acted by using the example of kibbutz and not Pul Lavan. He's saying, I don't agree with Rashi. Because if he did, he would have said Pul Lavan and jumped to Beitza.
Okay.
Skip Beitza's limit. That would be the perfect way to say
it. See, Yechiel, maybe you want to change the title of my shiur today.
It's still a great shiur, but I don't...
I wasn't trying to be facetious. What I meant to say is, I thought the title of today's shiur is to try to reconcile the steer and the rush. Maybe we should alter the title of the shiur to try to understand how the Ma'arik would interpret this sugya in Bava Kamma in the case of an egos, and reconcile it with the fact that we pass it like you. Maybe that should be the new title. Again, I reserve judgment. I think intuitively, I think you're 100% right, Yechiel. It's very hard to assume that the Rosh accepted Rashi, that the minimum shear of an Esrog is Kapulalof. But it does open up fantastic opportunities. And it's all based on one premise. This is the breakthrough of the Marik, that there's some concept called Mitzas Noi, and Esrog might be the exception to the rule that applies to all other mitzvahs, namely Zekei V'Aveil. That in addition or extraneous to or external to the basic mitzvah, now you have a chiyuv of adding noy. In the case of Esrog, we might already have the noy built in. Again, that's the first interpretation of Lamarik. According to the second interpretation of Rarik, we don't have the noy built in because we're talking about an Esrog that is somewhat less than Kibetzo. But Rabbi Yehuda says your standard and your obligation to achieve Zekei V'Aveil is going to be achieve Kibetzo. It's not enough that you're paying for an egos. If you're paying for an egos and the seller is telling you, oh, this is Zekei, look at this beautiful Esrog. It's as big as a wall. It's a heck of a lot bigger than a bull I love. And he charges you another third. So you think you're getting the best deal under the sky, under the heavens. Man, the guy's country, he's only adding a third of the price. And he's offering me an Esrog that's five times the size of a Kapula Lama. Says the Rush, or again, if you don't want to call it the Rush, says the Marik, he's pulling the wool over. So not deliberately, Hashem, that being judgmental. But he says, you're a Lamdin, and you know that that's not going to cut the mustard. There's no difference between Kapula Lama and Ke'egos because you're still below the par of Hidur. And when, says Rabbi Yehuda, do you achieve the par of Hidur? When can I say, wow, that's a Gezutta Gishmaka Esrog? Only when it's Kibetza. So if he's offering you an Esrog the size of Kibetza, pay him an extra thing.
That's his
it gets mixed up.
No, makes us annoyed. What is it?
It is an element of beauty to it. Yes. Noi means to go beyond the bare basics, the bare bones basics, which is mufka from noy. There's no beauty whatsoever.
It just seems strange to say that the marig is all hinging on marig's definition, which includes mitzvahs noy. And mitzvahs noy, it's very self, seems like a tarte disaster. The mitzvahs noy, it's either noy or it's not noy.
Well, again, Alan, you're adding one third to the price. What do you think you're going to get? You know, a Jew likes a good deal, but come on. You know, you want to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Noi, and I'm telling you to spend a third of the price. Right? From Rabbi Heinemann's perspective, it means that the Esrog sells for $30, and I'm going to charge you an extra $10.
Correct.
You just spent $10 to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Zekei Leavim. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, give it a break.
There are times when it's effective and when it's not effective. The fact is,
So why is $10 enough to make it effective?
No, it isn't.
Says the Marit, because that's a mixas noy.
If it is, no, well, that's what he's saying, it's a mixas noy.
Because again, it's only a third of the price.
Yeah, but no, but he's saying that's the maximum you have to spend. Halacha cannot
force you. You might even spend less than a third.
It could be, but it can't make you spend more of it.
Okay, but I'm just telling you, why did I want to spend more of it?
If you wouldn't achieve noy.
But I'm asking you, Alan, I'm showing you two heftes of mitzvahs. One is like, you know, give it a break. You know, it's like bare bones. The other one is beautiful, beautiful. Why don't you spend another 50% of the price?
But they won't let
don't
you.
Be so cheap
won't
on me.
You
know why? That's where the Marik comes up with his chiddush. All we want is mitzvahs noy. Otherwise, otherwise, Rav Haim is going to get very nervous. Because I'm going to give you an esrog that's worth 1,000 shekels. Because I saw the movie Ushpizin.
Yeah, no, but what it says, Ush or Shlish, you're saying if you cannot attain a significant improvement in Noi for Shlish, you don't have to spend it at all because you're not gaining anything.
Exactly.
That's not Mitzvahs Noi. In other words, all you get is Mitzvahs Noi, you've done nothing.
Well, again, were you here when I discussed the Rashi about Lulav HaYavesh? I don't know if you were here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I'm saying is that the concept of Mitzvahs Noi has to do with the Einsteinian theory of relativity, meaning everything is relative. The question is, you know, relativity can take me to infinity. So the Marik is trying to figure out where do we standardize, how do we standardize the concept of relativity with regard to Zekei Leavim. Rabbi Zeir already started the process. He said, Ad Shlish, not more. You want to spend more? That's ahead of
it. That's a whole thing.
What?
That's something else.
So comes along the Ma'arik and he says that in the theory of relativity, there's something called Miktas Noah. What do I mean? I could sell you the most beautiful, you know, the, what should we call it, Miss Universe Esrog, right? And it's the most gorgeous, beautiful Esrog, and I'm going to charge you for it. Is that included? You see, the Reb Zeir wants to put the limit at a shlish and tell you not chayv to more than a shlish. So that's where the Ma'arik comes up in Miktas Noah. We both have a lot to talk to you about today, and I know the time is pressing. So let's speak later. I'm not running away. I'm here. Okay. I don't know if I'm here to learn kachin with you. We can talk about that if you want. Because the best time for me for kachin would be Mondays and Thursdays between 2 and 3, if that works out for anybody. But we need a group. It's an extra effort, and it's a noy mitzvah, but it's a Miktas Noah. It's only twice a week, but you know, if we can get together whatever the number of the quantum. So David, now you're on board. Okay, we're going to go back to the sugya of Bosar. Okay, then what's Bosar all about? So today, what I want to share with you is a Chazon Ish. Okay? So just give me a minute to find it. I know I wrote it on my little petek here. Okay. Oh. So here, I know if you just want this, you know, just if you want to look up the Chazon Ish, maybe you could even print it out for us. I'm going to just read you a short summary of the Chazon Ish. Okay. So let's go over the basics. It works like this. Everything I'm going to tell you is Shitas HaTosis. Tosis says there are two sugyas, one here on Lamed Aleph, and the other on Daf Lamed Vav, and there's no overlap between the two sugyas. We should not confuse, and we should refuse any attempt to confuse us that these two sugyas are interdependent. They are totally independent, one of the other. One sugya here that we're doing now is called an Esrog Katar, and the other sugya on Lamed Vav is called Bos, Esrog Bos. And now Tosis creates a fantastical presentation about the, you know, the different sugyas, and you know, it's a whole constellation. The sugya here on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis is addressing the case of an Esrog Katan, which means the minimum shear of an Esrog. And as we saw, the Gemara presents a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Meir, what's the minimum shear? Ke'egos. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's kebeis. Okay. Now, if you read the Gemara carefully, the Gemara establishes that Rabbi Yehuda is not satisfied with ke'egos, mishum delo gamar peri. Now let's translate that in a very loose way, without really understanding what we're saying, which is a kind of a literal translation. The fruit, in this case the esrog, which is a fruit, the Torah calls it a pre-etz hadar, is lo gamar peri. It's not complete. It's not mature. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says about an egos. If you have an esrog in front of you that's as small as an egos, is Rabbi Yehuda says, lo gamar peri. And that's not called a pre. Okay. Now we have the sugya Lamed Vav, which is called bosar. There are two different sugyas. The sugya of esrog katar is talking about an esrog which has reached its maximum growth. And Rabbi Yehuda says that if it reached its maximum growth, which means it has no growth potential, and it's only as small as an egos, lo gomar peri. That's not considered a gomar peri. We'll come back to this in just a minute. Says Tosus, that's not the sugya on Daf Lamed Vav. The Sugyan Daf Lamed Vav, which records Machlok Shin Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, is talking about Bosa, which means it's going to continue to grow. And right now, you're taking the Esrog before it continues to grow. So again, if it has reached its maximum growth, that's the Sugya of Esrog Katan, and that's an issue of Gomar Peri. If, however, it's going to continue to grow, Rabbi Akiva says it's possible because it's what? Bosa. Why is Bosa a problem? So the Gemara offers two answers to that question. The first answer is, Eino Royal is real. Eino Royal is real is a concept that's borrowed and it's very profound in Hilchos Maaseros. And the Gemara always tells us that there's no Chiyuv Maaser on Bosar, because Bosar means that if you would cut open the pri, you would find that the zera, the seeds within the pri, are not capable of producing. The Gemara says, I have another explanation, an alternative pshat as to why Rabbi Akiva says that an esrog of bosar is excluded, even if you'll tell me that Rabbi Akiva agrees that we don't derive conclusions from maaser to esrog. And that's because of hadar. And the Torah says that an esrog has to be a pre-eitz hadar. And if this pre is meant to grow continuously, continue its growth, and now you're using it before it continues its growth, it's not called hadar. So our question is to try to understand why in the case of a small esrog that has completed its growth, it's not going to grow anymore, that's possible because lo gomar peri. Why is it in the case of bosar, which is going to continue its growth if you would only allow it to do so, when you take it for the mitzvah on the first day of yontif, you have a problem of either lo ena royal is real or it's not called hadar? What's going on? So the Chazon Ish says the following. I'll quote to you his language. Are you able to?
No.
All right.
No, I got it.
You have it? Okay, so see if you can find the following language of the Chazon Ish. Again, it's part of a longer piece, but I just want to zoom in on one particular line. He says the following. Listen carefully, Rabbi Yisrael. He says that in the case of an esrog katan, which means, let's say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only in the size of an egos, and again, it's not going to grow any larger. Kevan di ein lo ta'am pri, ein ze esro. Now let me point out that there are two premises here in the Chazon Ish. Premise number one is that for an esrog to be an esrog, it has to have the ta'am of an esrog. Okay? In fact, the Gemara says something unique about the esrog and its tam. It's tam eitzo ki tam hapri. So the Chazon Ish builds a lot on this concept of tam. And he says that if the esrog is very small, let's say according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only an ego size, then if you sink your teeth into the egos, you won't hear, you won't experience the tam of an esrog. Secondly, it's the second chiddush of the Chazon Ish, if it doesn't have a tam of esrog because it's so small, then it's not an esrog. Those are his two premises. Bosa. Again,
why aren't they the same?
No, first he's saying that tam is essential.
Okay.
And then he's saying that if it's a very small esrog, then it doesn't have the tam.
Ah.
Okay? And if it doesn't have the tam, then it's not an esrog. So again, maybe I should say it in the other order. Let's start and we'll swing it around. First of all, he's saying that if it's very small, it doesn't have tam, tam esrog. And then he's saying, this is the bomb, that if it doesn't have tam apri, tam of esrog, it's not an esrog. And now my question to you is, with all due respect, is that what Tosfos says about the psul of a small esrog? What was the language of Tosfos? And he got it straight from the Gemara.
In pre-Gemara.
Exactly. Lo gamar pri. Tosfos doesn't say that it's not a pri. Tosfos doesn't say that it's not an esrog. Tos is willing to say it is a pri. But it's lo gamar pri.
That's a pre-pri.
It's a pre-pri. Excellent.
Yeah, but the point is that it can be defined as not being a pre.
It's not
pre. It's a pre-pri. It's not that's, pre-pri. That's what
it's before. Exactly
if Tosis meant to say it's not a pre, he would have said that. He would have said lo chashu pri. He says it's pre, but it's not a gamar pri.
It's not right.
I find it very difficult to accept the Chazon Ish in the language of Tosfos. Again, everyone, you know, it's a free country here. You know, there's no compulsion here. You know, you don't have to accept my pshat. But it would seem to me that Tosfos is talking about a different concept. He's not saying Pok Hashem Pri. And I'll tell you what the Nafkamina might be. It could be very possible that when we get to the balance of Sukkos, which means the Mitzvah Drabbanon of Sukkos, then maybe if it's Lo Gomar Pri, it could be kosher. The Rabbana might say, well, this is still an Esro. Again, it's not a Gmar Pri, and it's missing that clincher, that Makabah Patish, but don't tell me it's not a Pri. So the Chazon Ish says it doesn't have a Tama Pri. And if it doesn't have a Tama an Esro, it does hasten the Kinesro, it's not an Esro. I'm convinced that according to the Chazon Ish, you would not be able to use a small Esro, let's say it's the size of an Egos, for any one of the days of Sukkos, even for the balance of Sukkos, which is only a mitzvah derabbanan, because it's not called an esro. His language is very clear. He says ein ze esro.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. Like if you took the seed of an esro, say, and you say this is an esro, like, it doesn't look like an esro, but it will be an esro. You know, but that doesn't
can't count. Use it.
Yeah, so this
can't use it. But don't tell me it's not a gemar pri. Tell me it's not a pri. If Tosa wanted to add a chiddush here, which has tremendous nafkamina halacha, he should have said ein ze esro. He doesn't say ein ze esro. He says ein ze gemar pri. Okay. So that's point number one. Now I want to point out something else. I have here in my Gemaras, I don't know if you have it in yours, the Tosas HaRosh. Again, it's a very sophisticated printing of the Gemaras. And in the back of the Gemara, he has the Tosas HaRosh. So the Tosas HaRosh says the following. Esro got Bosar. Now again, in the case of Bosar, we gave one of two possibilities. We said it was either Eino Roi L'Zriya, or it was not considered hadar. See, writes the following. He says that this machlokus about the status of a bosar between Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham has nothing to do with the sugya back on Daf Lamed Beis, Lamed Aleph, the sugya of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And basically he goes through the whole logic of Tosfos, and he says, Lo shayachak plukta l'shir esro, the pligili el. I don't know, in my Gemara it says lamed dalet, but it's a printing mistake. It should say lamed aleph. Lemar bika egos, ulemar bika beitza. Actually the sugya again quotes this machlokas on lamed dalet. Gafilu gadol me egos, u kibetza. It's even larger than kibetza. Posel Rabbi Akiv, posel Rabbi Akiv, mishum de la bar zriya hu lechad taimu lefi tamashen, mishum de boy hidur. It doesn't have hidur. Hadar, I should say. However, shir eso katan delia lav mishum de lav hider hu, lav hadar hu, el mishum de lav gmar perahu kide isa li el. So far, word for word, the Tosfos, which is typical of the Rosh. The Tosfos of Rosh has the same girsa that we have, but hang on, he changes something. He goes on to reject Rashi. Okay, that's fine. Then he says the following. He says, Afil Rabbi Akiva, the Pasal Bibosar, which is an esrog that's continued to grow, Machshir, he would still agree that the esrog is kosher if it stops its growth, Bika Egos Lamar, meaning Koint Rabbi Meir, Ubikabait Salamar according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why did Chashim Gmar Peri? So Rikiva has no problem with a small esrog if it reaches Gmar Peri. Because it's not so small, it's a little bit larger than so small, it's the size of an egon, so it's the size of a kibetza. And that's already considered Gmar Peri, and both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would agree that once it reaches Gmar Peri, it's not possible. Bosar is a different problem, because since it should have grown... Do you have the Tosura?
Yes, what Daffin does it?
On Lamed Vav.
Lamed Vav and Menach?
Yeah, Lamed Vav and Menach. The Sugya of Bosar is on Lamed Vav and Menach. He says the following. Listen to his language. He says, Avo pochos mikan lo choshiv gmar peri. The afal gav di ein sofo li gadol yoser. Again, the difference here between our sugya on daf lamed aleph and the sugya bosar is here. We're talking about an esrog that's not going to grow any larger. So you and I might say, if it's not going to grow any larger, then it's not called gmar peri. At least in the case where it's going to grow larger, I could say that it's on the way to gmar peri, and maybe I can anticipate now that it's going to reach gmar peri. This is already truncated. It's not going to reach any more than it is. He says, "Afal gav di ein sofali gadol yoser." So now we're talking about a pri, an esrog that's smaller than an egos according to Rav Meir, smaller than a kibetza. It's not going to grow anymore. And again, if it would grow more than if it had the potential to grow more than according to Rav Akiva, it would be what? Bosar, it would be posel. So you would say now, even if it's smaller than an egos, or smaller than a kibetza, since it's not going to grow any larger, that's called the Gmar Peri. That's exactly where the buck stops. It's not going to grow anymore. So I could have understood, says the Rosh, that if you have a very, very small esrog that's less than an egos or less than a kibetza, and it's going to grow more, then that's not called, then it hasn't reached its Gmar Peri. But if you're talking about an esrog that's maxed out, it's not going to be growing anymore. And that's by definition, the sheep of the rush, that's called an esrog katan, and it's not a bosar. So then, if it's ain't sofuli gadol yoser, why do you tell me it's not gemar peri? That is the gemar peri. Says the rush, listen to the language of the rush. Ki niskalkel bekatnusa. Shelo yavo li olam li de bishol. He has a new take on Lo Gomer Peri, the Rosh. What's Lo Gomer Peri? If we compare this esrog to a classical esrog, then why is it that this esrog is not growing anymore? It's a dwarfed esrog. Says the Rosh, there's a genealogical problem with this esrog. And that's what he calls Niskalkel Bikatnusa. Why is this esrog not growing anymore? The fact that it's not growing anymore indicates that there's something rotten in Denmark. Because every other esrog continues growing. It doesn't stop when it's a half an egos or a half a kibetza or even 99% of a kibetza according to Rav Yehuda. It should have grown more. If we compare this esrog to the classical esrog, the Rove esrog, if you can call it that, then we're going to have to come to the conclusion that the fact that this esrog is not growing anymore, like all its buddies, means that there's something different about this esrog. It's a mudna esrog. It's a strange esrog. And he says, if you want to define it as a strange esrog, it's niskalkel bekatnusa. The fact that it remains so small means that there's some kilkel here, there's some aberration on a natural level. He's a bosai, I think. And that's up to you. But I think that according to the Russians' understanding of Lo Gomer Peri, we can introduce a new concept here. It's not new to us, but we can apply it. And what's that called? What do you call any of the four minim, and certainly an esrog, which has some sort of natural freak? You know, it's just not normal. Starts with a mem and ends with a mem, and it has only one letter in the middle. I gave it away probably for most of them. Oh wow, you figured it out. It's a mum. The concept of mum, which means that there's some of normality with regard to this Esrog, you know, we'll have to send it to the psychiatrist, right? That itself makes it into a Balmum. And we saw earlier in this Pharic that if the Esrog is a Balmum, then we don't consider it an Esrog. And then Afkamina is that once the Esrog is a Balmum, it's possible for all 7 days.
So why does he call it a Balmum? You should call it that it doesn't have Zekeh Levi Aveyu.
No, what I'm saying is this has nothing to do with Zekeh Levi Aveyu, Alan. What I'm saying is that this Kalkel is one of those words that, you know, you should associate, you press it on the, and what appears on the radar screen is mum. That's what this Kalkel means. Then what the Tosa Rush is offering here is a possibility that the words Lo Gomar Peri, because he's also using the words Lo Gomar Peri, means that it's a Balmum. It doesn't mean Lo Gomar Peri the way we thought it means, that it's a pre, but it hasn't reached its complete maturation. But rather what we're saying is that since it won't continue to mature, therefore there's something unusual about this Esrog. It's this Kalkil B'Katnu, so it's a Balmum. That's what Lo Gomar Peri means. And perhaps we can achieve our goal of salvaging the Chazon Ish. Again, the Chazon Ish has a different take on it. He's not saying what the Tosa Rosh says, but the final conclusion, I think, is identical. What did the Chazon Ish say? Because it doesn't have a Tam of an Esrog, it's so small. Therefore what? It's not an Esrog. So I asked you the question, what do you mean it's not an Esrog? For sure it's an Esrog. Tosa says Lo Gomar Peri, but it's a Pri. He doesn't go as far as to say Lav Peri. Comes along the rush and he says, you know what it means that Lav Lo Gomar Peri? It means that there's something freaky about this Esrog. This Esrog is different than all the other Esrogim. We could write the Manishtad about this Esrog.
And therefore it's not an Esrog?
And therefore it's not an Esrog, it's a Balmum. The difference between an Esrog that's Pasul and an Esrog Balmum is that an Esrog Balmum is Pasul for all 7 days. And we had many examples in Lulavim with a Lulav that's a Balmum. And if a Lulav is a Balmum, and it doesn't produce the leaves, then it's possible all Shiva, because it's called a Balmum. Again, how that kicks into the Sugya Mitzvah Bob Aver in the case of Lulav HaGozel, I don't know, because the Gemara also classifies a Lulav HaGozel as a Balmum. But a Lulav HaYavish is not a Balmum. A Lulav HaYavish is a Psul of what? Of Hadar. According to the Chacham and Rebbe Yehuda, correct? But you would never say about a Lulav HaYavish that it's a Balmum. So what is a Balmum? In the context of Dalad Min, that comes up over and over and over again. And remind me, I want to give you a whole bunch of examples. The answer is that a Balmum, says the Tosa Rosh, is Niskalkel. There's some sort of a kilkel here. It's not normal. It's an abnormal species. Well, not a species, but a member of the species. And if it's a Balmum, because of Niskalkel, then it doesn't have a Shem Esrog. So what I'm suggesting here is that I can't accept the Chazon Ish hook, line, and sinker and assume right now that Tosis has in mind that it doesn't have a Tam of an Esrog. That I don't know if I'm willing to accept. You know, maybe we should do an experiment and take a very small, prematurely born, you know, an immature Esrog and see what it tastes like. But what I would say is that we could justify the conclusion of the Chazon Ish, namely that an Esrog Katan is not an Esrog. And why isn't it an Esrog? Because it's a Balmum. It's Niskalkel B'Katnus.
But that's not a general definition of a Balmum in a Kohen, whereas a Mum remains a Kohen forever.
He has no Kedushas Kohuna. This is one halacha called Pol Yod of Yirtzeh, but we don't even understand how that works. If the Evidi did the Avodah, but forget about that halacha. A Kohen Balmum is allowed to go into Beis HaKfaras. He's Mufka from Kedushas Kohuna.
Yeah, but
he can't do any Avodah.
But a Ben Kohen Balmum is still
good.
A Kohen.
So then that you're not going to catch him now, Alan. But trust me, the concept of Balmum is a total psul. It's an absolute hafka. And I'm going to show it to you over and over again in the Rishonim here in this Perek, that whenever they invoke the principle of Balmum, what they mean is it's not an Esrog. You can't even dream of using it the rest of the Chag. So if you accept that point right now, and if you want me to prove it to you, I'll spend a lot of time, believe me, then that's what's going on here in the Tosa Rosh. that Lo Gomar Peri is not what you think it is. Lo Gomar Peri means it's a Balmum, there's something freaky about this. It's an abnormality. And it's called Miskalkel. Now let's talk about Bosar. Bosar is a whole different story. Bosar means you plucked it off the tree premature. It's going to continue to grow. So what's the psula going to have to keep? So the Gemara says, because at this point it's a lab bar zriya, and Rabbi Akiva derived an analogy from what? From Zrayim to Esmog. Oh, Dilma, the second interpretation is that it's not Hadar. If it's not Hadar, then that's not a freak of nature. That's a problem with this Esrog, because you didn't give it time to become a beautiful Esrog. Let it grow a little bit. Now you're arresting its growth process. It's going to continue to grow, but you're taking it now. That's not called Hadar. What would Rabbi Akiva say about a Bosar on the second day of Yontif? It would be the same status as a Lulav Hayavish, etc., 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 of all the Psalm of Hadar. Niktam Rosho and Nifritzu Olav. No, Nifritzu Olav is the only exception. Because the Aruch Laner says that Nifritzu Olav is a Balmum. It's not a lulav anymore, because the leaves of the lulav were completely detached. That's a broom. Call it a broom, but if you attach it with a rubber band, it's going to be a great broom for you. They make brooms out of lulavim, but don't call it a lulav. But all the other list of psulim are all considered a lulav, but it's not hadar. If it's not hadar, use it on the second day. Masha Ein came in the case of Esro Kata. According to the way the Chazon Ish understands Lo Gomar Peri, and I claim that's where the Tosafot Rosh 1,000 years before the Chazon Ish understood it, that's not a Esrog at all. But Bosar, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's a technicality. There's a technical Chisaron of Hadar. And if it's a Chisaron of Hadar, then it's still an Esrog with a Psul, and you didn't let it mature on the tree and become a beautiful Esrog. The Chiddush Shir of Rabbi Akiva, which the Rabbanan rejected, is that there are other Esrogim that reach that stage, and Rabbi Akiva himself would agree they're kosher, because they're not going to continue to grow. So it's Kibetza, and Rabbi Akiva says it's kosher, and it's not going to continue to grow. So what's Rabbi Akiva bothered by? I have two Esrogim in front of me. They look identical. One is going to continue to grow, and the other has completely arrested its growth. And Rabbi Akiva says that one is fossil and one is kosher. The answer is that Hadar is relative. If this is the maximum Hadar that the Esrog can reach, then it's kosher. If it's not a freaky Esrog, it's known as Kalkil, because it reached the size of a Kibetza, and it's not going to grow anymore, that's Hadar. And it's not, there's no freak of nature here. It's not as Kalkil, Bekatnusa. But if you took it off the tree and now it still has a maximum growth, that's not hot. Why? Because I'm going to compare this Esrog to a normal classical Esrog. And most Esrogim of this sort are going to continue to grow. Rabbi Sackler would ask me, how much growth are you going to allow it? There's no limit. But the Gemara is going to have a whole sugi about that. But as far as Hadar is concerned, since the Esrog has a potential, if you'd only leave it alone, let it subside on a lane, leave it alone, it would develop even further and mature and grow, says Rabbi Akiva, then it's not Hadar. And the standards is going to be your classical Esrog. Then you have the aberration Esrog. You have an Esrog that is so small that it reached its maximum growth. How did that happen? Why did that happen? And the answer is, that's called an Esrog HaKotan, which is Lo Gomar Peri. There's something fluky about this Esrog. There's no reason why it shouldn't reach a greater growth. Why did it max out at the size of 9.9 of a kibbutz? Okay, Rabbi, so what time is it now?
1:40.
Okay, so we'll stop here for Mincha. I had a whole list of topics that I wanted to cover today. I wish everyone a great Shabbos, Parshas Kitovo. And in Ritz Hashem, we'll continue next week and Tuesday.
What time is it?
I can only tell you our program for sleep, but you're asking me when sleep, because I don't have an answer. The program starts at 11:15 with a great conference. And again, Yechiel, I'm not going to tell you that I'm, you know, I don't like to sell the Brooklyn Bridge. I'm not one of these salesmen. I'm not good at marketing. I'm terrible at
however.
However, the Kumsitz I've gone to already for a couple of years, and it's really Kedai. I think it's 11:15. I'll double check out.
You notice it tells in Rosh at the end, comments on Rashi, who loves and he doesn't like it. So that it really goes to up for the Arik, his explanation.
Correct. A lot of Rishonim, especially the Baliatosis and Tosa Rosh, and they can't tolerate this completely.
Sorry, again. When we're during a Kumsitz,
I think Motzei Shabbos at 11:15. I'll double check it. It should be on the billboard right out here. You know, but I'll double check it.